Commodore Hour is on the air. Over the next hour, we'll discuss the latest around Vanderbilt athletics and hear from players, coaches, and administrators. Commodore Hour is brought to you by Gupton Chrysler Dodge Jeep Ram in Springfield, Ascend Federal Credit Union, the exclusive credit union of Vanderbilt Athletics, and by the Middle Tennessee Ford dealers, built Ford Tough. Now, here are your hosts, Andrew Allegretta and Kevin Ingram.
Well, good evening and welcome to the Commodore Hour on the Vanderbilt Sports Network from Learfield. I am Andrew Allegretta here with Kevin Ingram. Coming up on tonight's show, we've got Coach Clark Lee at 6:30. In just a few moments, women's basketball head coach Jay Ralph will be on the show. We'll preview Georgia with our keys to the game. But first, Kevin, let's start with Vanderbilt's and Stanford, of course. Vanderbilt falls to Stanford. A very difficult stretch at the end of the first half that certainly was the tide turning in that ball game. But what were your major takeaways as you look back to Saturday?
Yeah, I kind of look back to Saturday, and you're exactly right. That stretch right before halftime, that two-minute stretch, made all the difference in the game. It went from a 14-14 game to a 13-point deficit going to the break, and an interception mixed in there, and then Stanford gets a stop, gets off the field to get a big return. Vanderbilt was hurt a couple times in the return game, and it was just hard for Vanderbilt to recover after that. You know, you still had plenty of football game left in the second half with two more quarters to go, but it felt like that was almost a knockout blow for Stanford at that point.
I think you looked at a program that probably has been built very successfully over the better part of 10 to 15 years with two coaches between Jim Harbaugh and David Shaw. And of course, Clark Lee's in his first season, so you saw some of those differences. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, I think it's worth noting a handful of players for Vanderbilt that did excel through some adversity. First off, Vandy loses Ray Davis late in that first half, but stepping up is Rocco Griffin. He finishes with 107 yards with a 36-yard line. I thought Rocco did a really nice job rushing, and overall, Kevin, for a football team that we've talked about trying to find its offensive rhythm and identity, they ran the football fairly well against Stanford in this game.
Really did. Rush for over 200 yards in that game, 44 carries for 247, and Rocco was terrific. You know, he had rushed overall last season a limited amount of playing time for less than 100 yards, and he had 107 net yards on Saturday night. He's kind of a compact guy, but man, he can run with power, and he shows that. And I thought he had a really nice game. Talked to him after the game, and you could tell, I mean, the loss hurt, but I think he, you know, was happy to have that opportunity to carry the football some. We hope Ray Davis will be back. He came out after halftime with his foot in a boot. That was of concern for sure. But, you know, Ray has been terrific through three games, 12 carries for 76 in that one on Saturday. But really happy for Rocco to get that chance and make the most of it.
And congratulations to Devin Boddy, the wide receiver for Vanderbilt, comes up with his first career touchdown reception in that ball game as mm-hmm. well. So, look, certainly a difficult ball game for Vanderbilt. Nobody's ducking that. To be 14-14 late in the first half, and then to have it turn on you on especially a couple of special teams plays, which we'll talk mm-hmm. with Coach Clark Lee about coming up at 6:30. That was difficult to swallow for Vanderbilt. But, again, I think you watch that football game and recognize that Vanderbilt has work to do in this territory. But at the same time, you can see where these pieces can be for Vanderbilt down the road.
You do, but you got to avoid those big mistakes. And,
for sure.
And we talked about special teams even going into the game, that for Vanderbilt to have a chance to be successful, the special teams almost has to be airtight. You know, you don't want to put too much pressure on these guys, but you know, you got to cover kicks. You got to make kicks. Harrison Smith in the punt game has been fantastic. Averaged 45.06 kicks back on Saturday with a long of 56. That part's been really good. The kicking game with Bulvis, he's been good. But, yeah, you just – That's part of it that really has to be good for this team to you feel like week in and week out really have the best opportunity to win. But yeah, you know, right there with a good Stanford team for a whole lot of the first half, a team that had just come off a big win over USC on the road the previous week. So yeah, you get that one, and now you turn around and you play Georgia this week. So the schedule doesn't get a whole lot easier with the number two Bulldogs coming to town. I know we'll get into that more with the coach coming up a little bit later.
Yeah, life in the SEC certainly is not easy for anybody, especially when Georgia comes to town. Last thing I'll say about the Stanford game, too, is just the fact that I think Stanford has its quarterback. They found Tanner McKee. That was sort of the storyline for them coming into this ball game as they go from Jack West, who struggled against Kansas State, and then Tanner McKee comes in, and they've had a long line of very successful quarterbacks, and they may have found their next guy out in Palo Alto for sure.
Yeah, he looked really good. 218 and a couple touchdowns, and did a nice job on Saturday. He had a terrific game the week before. So I think you're right. They seem like they found their guy and another in a long line. And it was just been a program with a lot of stability, a lot of toughness. They had some guys out and they missed that game on Saturday. They were key guys, but they went right on and looked good on Saturday. So props to Sam for their performance here in Nashville.
Yeah, for sure. Credit where credit is due. And again, like you said, 11 years under David Shaw, you can see that consistency. You can see that identity with the way that they've built that program. We'll step aside. Coming back in just a couple of seconds, we'll have the head coach of Vanderbilt women's basketball, Shea Ralph, with us. And again, at 6:30, head coach Clark Lee joins the program as well. We'll step aside, come back in just a few moments after this with Coach Ralph on the Vanderbilt Sports Network from Learfield. Welcome back. Andrew Allegretti here with Kevin Ingram, and pleased to welcome the head coach of Vanderbilt women's basketball, Coach Shea Ralph. Thank you so much for stopping by. We appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
Let's start with the basic, Coach. This is your first season going into it. Where do you begin? You got this job a handful of months ago, and you're constructing your staff. You're building a vision for your program. Where did you want to start and why?
Well, I think starting for us was getting the right people here. Obviously, my staff was incredibly important. So right away, it was getting the right people, finding the right level of coach, but more importantly, people that whose values aligned with mine. So most of the people that are on my staff I've either worked with, or my associate head coach, who's also my husband, has worked with, who played for one of us. So we really love that loyalty and trust in our staff. They're also highly skilled and talented and passionate at what they do. That was very beginning parts of building something special for us, because these are the people that we're going to be putting around our players. And so then it became, let's get them on campus, and now we're going to spend the summer with our team and really lay a foundation of the culture that we want here at Vanderbilt throughout our sports, right? We're laying a very strong foundation that will, I think, pay off down the road in wins. But it takes time and effort, and we're trying right now to just continuously invest in our players.
If I can ask the incredibly obvious question, which I know you've been asked before, but I do think it's worth, again, kind of starting here with all of this, is you have been, not just recently, but you have been a very hot head coaching commodity. A lot of people would have liked to take you from UConn. Vanderbilt did. Why this place?
It's a funny question, because I get it asked a lot, and I think it's obvious. Vanderbilt is incredibly special. There isn't anything that this school doesn't have. We're in the best conference in the country for college women's basketball, number one. We're in the city of Nashville. Really great place to recruit, to live in. I mean, list all the things. And then it's Vanderbilt. It's one of the best institutions in the country, much less the world. So to me, everything we have and need to be successful is here at Vanderbilt. It was an absolute no-brainer. I was honored that I got the call.
What's it been like working with your husband, you know, on a daily basis? I mean, is it fun? Is it interesting? I'm sure, I mean, you know, you probably go home, you still talk basketball when you get home too. But what is that? How does that work?
Well, you know, we met when we were coaching, and we've known each other for over 15 mm-hmm. years. So most of our conversations since we met have been about basketball. Mm-hmm. We share a passion for playing, and we share a passion now for coaching and teaching. And it was a goal of ours in our lives to be able to work together and build something special. So, I mean, obviously, the days are interesting, they're fun, they're all the things that they can be, but he is the perfect partner for me in every sense of the word. So, you know, when we're parenting, when we're having fun with each other, now when we're at work, we just, our personalities, the way we work, our knowledge, everything just marries and plays well together. And I'm just so happy to have the opportunity to do it with him, because he's one of the best coaches in the business. I know that the people that we work with know that, but our players are finding out every day just how good he is. And I'm grateful for him, because I don't think we could be as good as we could be without him.
You don't like make the kids run at home or anything like that. You know, when something goes wrong, it's like, no, anybody, you got to think of something else.
She's at the age where she likes it right now.
Oh, yeah.
We time
she hasn't figured it out yet. As far as this team, 8 players back that have experience, that have played, you got 5 freshmen. What do you feel like they need to learn at this level?
Everything. Everything right now. The biggest thing that we're trying to teach them is the pace that we need to play at, the effort that they need to give every single day, no matter what we're doing, no matter what we're doing, because at this level, everything you do is going to be hard. Everything worth having is very hard to get. Everybody wants to win. No one comes out on the court and expects to lose or tries to lose. So we have to train like winners. And, you know, that to us is where we need to start. And that's going to take time and effort and energy. And a lot of these players, like you just mentioned, they have not played a lot of basketball. We've mm-hmm. had some injuries. We had some players leave that were responsible for most of the minutes played last year and before. So we truly have a clean slate. And we know, my staff, we know where championships are built. We know how to build them. And you really can't skip any steps. So the first part is teaching them how to train like champions.
When you're trying to, you know, rebuild a basketball program, it's different from football. It's like football, it takes recruiting classes and time. With basketball, I mean, you have a couple of good recruiting classes. You can turn it around pretty fast, can't you? Or at least you like to think that you can.
I think so. I think you can do it much, much quicker than football, yeah. for sure. But it does take those people to believe in what you're doing. And mm-hmm. I think it's more about finding the right players. So there's a lot of great players. Very talented athletes in the country. The way that we're going to build this program, we need talent, obviously, right? But it's about finding the right talent. And the reason that I know that is because of what I was a part of building at UConn. We had a championship program for decades. And it was never that we had the best players. Everyone always says that. We didn't have the best players. We had the right ones. So we are really working hard in our recruiting to find the right athletes, the right people with the right character and values that align with what we're trying to do here at Vanderbilt. All the other stuff, the basketball stuff, we can teach. That's what we're good at.
You guys recruited fairly nationally at UConn, mm-hmm. correct?
Yes.
Do you feel like that helps you coming here to Vanderbilt? Because I suppose some other coaches take a new job, maybe they're outside of their recruiting territory, but you mm-hmm. feel like you've got a sense of women's basketball across the country, so that might help you some, yes or no?
Yes, yeah. Absolutely helps me. And because we're recruiting nationally here at Vanderbilt too. You know, Vanderbilt's a school that people want to come to. So obviously we have a much better talent pool in high school here in Tennessee than we did in Connecticut, so that's helpful. But we're also competing against University of Tennessee, a Tennessee school here, where at UConn we didn't have that. So it's important for us to make sure that we secure the talent within our borders, number one. But getting out nationally is not going to be an issue, and thankfully most of my staff has experience doing that because Nashville and Vanderbilt sell itself. We just have to get the people here on campus to see how great it is.
Talking with head coach Shea Ralph, talking about Vanderbilt women's basketball. Just introduce us to your team a little bit. We got to take a break here in a second. I want to ask you kind of about your history and where you've come from. Let Vanderbilt fans get to know you some. But before we take a break, just give us a sense of your team, some of the names fans can expect as they come to games this fall and into the winter. Without shortchanging anybody, right?
Well, like, yeah.
I don't want you to necessarily
wow.
feel like you have to go down.
We want all 15
roster.
Players right
yeah.
here.
And I don't mean to shortchange anybody because I know they're all impactful to the process that you have. But I guess just kind of a brief overview of what fans could expect from the girls on the floor.
Well, I think you guys are going to see a great mixture of talent. And probably our veterans, Brené Alexander and Jordan Cambridge, are two seniors. They both are coming off pretty serious injuries. Brené played a little bit last year. Jordan did not. And then Demi Washington is coming back from a really serious case of COVID last year that gave her a heart condition for a while. And we're just happy to have her back on the court. But already those three have been getting better and contributing in different ways. And then we have five freshmen who have come in and shake things up a little bit in terms of their talent, their ability to compete, all the things that they bring to the table. And then you have, you know, Bella LaChance, you have Chambers, you have Kaylin. I mean, we have so many players that bring so many different things to the table, but none of them have been expected to consistently bring a lot every day. So I think the way that we're going to do this year is together. But I'm very pleased with how much progress we've made in terms of their individual development and our development in laying the culture of our team. We're becoming a team right now.
All right, let's step aside. We'll come back in just a second, continue our conversation with Vanderbilt women's basketball head coach Shea Ralph in just a couple of seconds after this on the Vanderbilt Sports Network from Learfield.
Welcome back to Commodore Hour. Great to have you with us. It's been a rainy Monday. In fact, been a rainy few days here in Nashville. We are visiting with Vanderbilt women's basketball coach Shea Ralph. And, you know, you kind of look back to last season, especially for this program. How much of a setback was it for these players to only play just a small portion of a season, at least the ones who were returning?
It was obviously a huge setback for us, for their development probably, but they weren't the only ones. It mm-hmm. was all across the country. It wasn't limited to our team. I think that they did and made the decision that they had to make. And I wasn't here, so I'm not privy to all the details of it. But not training for that amount of time can be really hard to come back from. And to give you an idea, when we came into the summer training, we had to create a 4-week plan to get them to train at 100% because of catastrophic injury risk and just all the things that come along with not being a trained athlete where you're competing, right? So no one sits out for that long unless you have an injury. So that was our entire team. And then we had, you know, when we came in, there had been players that left. There was a lot to kind of clean up. So that for them was hard, but I think it was necessary in terms of the time that we spent with them and the way that we were building our culture. I think in the end, it will be a benefit for our team to have gone through that together.
I want to touch on something you hit earlier is talking about the athleticism of players and you know, maybe where you have to go there, but how have you seen that change in the game over, say, the last 20 years? To me, it's noticeable that you watch, by and large, across the country, how many more teams have more good athletes these days?
I used to tell my previous school at UConn, I used to tell Coach Arima, going out to watch players when we were recruiting, I'd say, you know, if I was competing against these players in high school, I would have probably been a manager somewhere and not actually on a team. Like, it's incredible the focus that these players have, the athleticism that they have, the training that they have. And so it's fun. It's fun to watch, but it's also fun to coach, to be able to train such high level athletes and see what they're capable of and watch them get better at their sport and watch them do things that you could only dream of doing. And seeing them be successful at it. It's why we do what we do.
All right. So you brought up his name. I'm curious about Gino in this sense, right? Because
it was my mistake, my fatal mistake.
You brought up his name. I'll go here. I think people are instinctually going to say, oh, she's from UConn, so it's going to be like UConn or whatever. I'm curious how you're not like Gino. How are you not going to be like Gino Auriemma as a coach? If that makes sense.
It does. And, you know, I've spent half my life pretty much either playing or coaching at UConn and training under him and learning how to build something really special, both as a player and a coach. So in any instance like that, I think there are things that you really agree with and that your values align with, and then there's things that you don't. And I learned a lot of that with him because he gave us so much responsibility as players and as coaches. So I felt like he let me be who I was going to be as a coach there while guiding me in the direction, hey, when you're a head coach, remember, you're going to have to think about these things. But he never boxed me in. And I think that our differences were always apparent. He's much more, you know, hot-headed in certain situations. But you would never know that sometimes in meetings or in practice. It just depended on what made him blow up at that moment. I'm not that way yet, I don't think, but I guess we'll find out.
We've asked some former players. Yeah.
I may be eating my words in a couple of months. But I think the other part of who I am as a coach is more aligned with maybe the player today. And I find that I'm much more positive than negative. And I think that that's just not a coaching thing. I think that's just who I am. So one of the bigger challenges for me as a head coach is really getting all over players who I think are giving great effort. If it's effort, then I'm not going to have a problem with it. If it's technical, we'll fix that. If you're not giving effort is where I get upset.
So UConn obviously is the bulk of your coaching experience, but it's not all of it. You were an assistant at Pittsburgh for, I think, was it 4 or 5 years?
5 years.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Starting in 2003, and you guys grew that program very well, very successful by the back end of your 5 years. So my question is, what did you learn about that growth process at Pittsburgh that you think you might be able to take here to Vanderbilt? Some of those early lessons from 03, 04, as you guys started to turn it before you left for UConn.
That portion of my coaching career was probably the most valuable. At UConn as a player, I lost single-digit games. In 5 years, we didn't lose. It wasn't the UConn that it became, but we were right yeah. there. We had just won our second national championship.
You were teammates with Sue Bird, yes?
I was for 3 years. Yeah. And then Diana Taurasi was a freshman. And then they went on to win several more right after I left. But Pittsburgh, when I got there the year before, they had won 3 games total. And my first year with the new head coach, we won 6, and we ended the year on a 22-game losing streak. And it ended in February. We didn't even get invited to the conference tournament. I didn't even know that was a thing. How can you be that bad that you don't even get invited to the conference tournament? Is that legal? Like, that can't be allowed.
Oh, they've changed the rules. It used to be like the top 8 teams go or whatever. Now it's all 14 or 15.
Yeah, now everybody gets to go. But at that point, it, like, they said, no, you're too bad. You can't even come here and waste our time. But it taught me how to invest in building a culture. The culture had been built at UConn, and we were just part of it, maintaining it. So being at Pittsburgh taught me really valuable lessons for what I need to know right now. And we did it the right way. It took us 3 years. My last 2 years, we went to the Sweet 16 and won like 22 and 24 games or something like that. So in terms of my growth as a coach, it was priceless.
What about the schedule? You open up November 9th against Gardner-Webb, going to go to the Paradise Jam in November. That'll be some good competition, and then you kind of go to Kansas. Good way to get ready, at least for what's going to be that tough grind of SEC play.
Yeah, we don't look that far ahead right now. The schedule is we're really excited about the schedule. I think it's both challenging and exciting for us. And the trip to Virgin Islands is going to be an awesome experience for our players. We're playing three really, really good teams. And then the SEC schedule speaks for itself. I think day to day right now, we're just focusing on our team and making sure that we're getting better, that we're continuing to build the kind of culture with each other and make ourselves a team so that we're ready when we start to play these games. And I've learned over the years that it's important to prepare, right? So part of our job as coaches is to prepare for what we're going to see. We do scouting and we talk about the other team. We're going to spend a lot more time coaching our team and making sure we're the best at what we can do, and that when we come up against opponents, no matter what they do, my hope is that my players will be prepared and will give their full effort.
What day does practice officially start?
September 28th is the first official day that it can start. I think we are actually going to start the next day, but we've been pretty much doing team workouts since they came back to school. The hours are just a little bit different. So we did all workouts this summer, individual skill workouts, some team workouts. They were here for 8 weeks, and then we gave them a week off, went home and got to see their families. And then they came back to school with everybody else on campus. And we really kicked off. As much time as I can spend with them, I'm spending with them.
Got settled in Nashville okay?
Oh, yes, finally. The housing market was not fun.
Yeah. Andrew can tell you about that, too.
Yeah.
I sure can.
Not ideal. But, you know, it also wasn't bad. It was a great time going out and looking at houses. And, obviously, our associate head coach, my husband, had worked here before, so we knew the area really well and ended up finding a house that we're really happy with in an area that we love.
Shay, I guess we'll let you roll on that. Thank you so much for the time. I know we're all looking forward to seeing the season. Everything gets started here. Won't be long. It'll be up and rolling.
It won't be long, but one day at a time, like I said. Come on, don't look too far ahead. We're so happy to be here. And please, everybody, come out and watch us play and support. These young ladies are working so hard, and I can't wait for you guys to see what our team looks like.
Appreciate the time.
Thank you.
All right, Vanderbilt women's basketball coach Shay Ralph joining us here on Commodore Hour. On the way next, we're going to have Coach Clark Lee. We'll talk about the game with Stanford and look ahead to Georgia coming up this weekend over at Vanderbilt Stadium. This is Commodore Hour from the Vanderbilt Sports Network from Learfield.
Welcome back to the Commodore Hour. Andrew Aldegretic here with Kevin Engram. Head coach Clark Lee is on his way shortly. Just don't forget, of course, our game broadcast for Vanderbilt versus Georgia starts at 9:30 coming up on Saturday. It's officially, because I know people like precision, 11:03 kickoff. Vanderbilt.
03?
It's an 03 kickoff. So
Not 02 and not 05.
It's not 05. It's 03. We're going 03 against Georgia.
All right.
Make sure you check that one out. Again, our coverage starts at 9:30 with the Commodore Tailgate Show. Kevin, Norman, Jordan jump on then. I'll join the coverage starting at 10:30, and then we'll get ourselves going. Let's quickly look, we typically save this for the final segment, but as we wait for Coach Lee, let's touch on this quickly. Georgia's going to be difficult. Again, just like the lack of satisfaction from the end of the first half. Nobody's dodging it from Stanford. No one's dodging the fact that Georgia is going to be ultra difficult. But very quickly, let's do our keys to the game brought to you by Gupton, Chrysler, Dodge, Jeep, Ram in Springfield, serving Middle Tennessee for over 60 years. You know, we could probably go through 1,000 stats, and it may not be fair in this moment in time to really talk in depth about stats and what Georgia can do and this, that, or the other thing. But if something jumps to mind for you, what might that be?
Well, the defense has been fantastic. Well, they've given up 20 points in three games or whatever it is. They've already beaten Clemson in a close, low-scoring game, then a couple blowouts, including this past week against South Carolina. So it's going to be tough to get something done against them. We talked about special teams earlier. To me, that feels like that's going to be a key as well.
Yep. Head coach Clark Lea has joined us here, and I guess I can double down on that. That's one thing that we can, Coach, jump right in with you as we talk about the Stanford game. We're just kind of talking a little bit about what's coming up with Georgia and areas that I'm sure you guys are focused on getting cleaned up. Let's start with special teams, because I know that was a point of, I suppose I can let you put your own word on that, but a handful of chunk returns from Stanford. How would you describe, after you've looked at the film, what you saw, what you want to get cleaned up, and what is possible for you guys in that third phase, but equally important phase of the game?
Yeah, we need to be successful here. It's got to be about complementary football. So we're not going to be able to just win a game playing great on offense or win a game, you know, playing great on defense. You know, we have to have all three phases interlocked in the effort. And what's just a shame is, you know, you go goal line stand, which was a great momentum shift for us. You go 98 yards in 7 minutes and 35 seconds. You know, there's just a great opportunity there to grab the momentum of the game. I believe there was 4 minutes left in the second quarter or thereabouts. And so when your kickoff team takes the field in that moment, they have one responsibility, and that is to absolutely annihilate the return. Now, we can't do it in sacrificing and compromising the details. So the first job is to be on sides. You know, and that was a poor start to a play that just had compounding errors. But, you know, that play needs to finish with the ball downed inside the 20 and our guys jumping and celebrating through to the end zone. And it's a missed opportunity. And I know Coach Lustig is sick about it. But we let that break out to midfield plus tack on the 5 yards. And that set up a field goal, you know, so we came away with three. Still a great opportunity. We get the ball back and, you know, we're careless with it on a third down throw that was 3rd and 8 because we dropped a slant on 2nd down. And we turn the ball over and, you know, a couple plays later they score a touchdown. And then we have one more chance to go down and get back some of that momentum. And you know, we put a punt up, and it's a big return. Again, another penalty. And, you know, that ends with the field goal at the end of the half. So there's so much there for us to unpack, but it starts with, you know, the detail and the execution. So, you know, the structural penalties have to stop, and that can't be a part of it. And then, you know, in a kickoff, the coverage is, you know, I mean, you're pretty well, you're understanding where the ball is going to land, where it's going to come out. I mean, it's a pretty rhythmic play. To me, that's about intent. It's about structure. It's about downing the ball. So we got a force player, keep it inside and in front. you got 11 players, 10 players without the kicker that are covering with the intent to seize the moment. You know, the punt is a combination of both, you know, distance covered and hang time. And then again, those coverage elements too. And we have to address both. You know, we have to address, you know, the placement of the punt, how high it's in the air, not out kicking the coverage, which is the common term used, which can add stressors on the coverage unit. And then, you know, in the moment, let's down the ball, let's get to half. Because, you know, we come out in the second half and the first play from scrimmage is a TFL, but watching the game afterwards. I mean, we have the defense absolutely separated. There's a wall built, and Gavin Schoenwald is blocking the linebacker. It's a counter play, and we miss the kick out on the end man of line of scrimmage. If we just seal that block, Rocco Griffin may still be running. And you know, not that that's an excuse. You can't, you know, being one block away is a formula for losing. But the idea is that, you know, we can get right back in the second half to doing what we had success doing in the first half. And understanding the level of control we have in those moments as a team, the control to be on sides, the control to seize momentum and to double down on our efforts as a team in the kickoff, the control to be smart with the ball at the quarterback position, again, the control to punt the ball a certain way and to cover it, the control to make the routine block to start the second half. You know, there's a chance there that what became, you know, a 20-0 middle eight score for Stanford could completely shift into our favor. And that is where this program has to, you know, we have to be totally sober in our look at that game and say, yeah, there's things to build on here. But, you know, for us to take the next step and beat a good team at home, we have to play a complete game. And it's there for us. It's just a matter of us, you know, again, totally looking in the mirror and saying, these are the things that have to get done. And where do we get them done? We get them done in practice.
Just real quickly, a couple of players. Any updates on Ray Davis? And do you think you'll have Pearson Cook available for you next weekend?
Ray, it's looking like Ray is going to be out. You know, I'm awaiting confirmation of that right now, but that's where it's looking right now. With Pearson, you know, it's just a matter of that's a COVID related miss, and so it's just a matter of you know, the barrier for him in terms of him getting through his symptoms and so on and so forth. So we'll wait and see on him, but Ray, it's looking like right now that he'll be out.
Coach, go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, Ray came out in the second half in a boot, and I was like, boy, that's bad news. But Rocco did a fantastic job. What do you appreciate about that guy, especially at his size, just the power and ability that he has and the way he's improved from last season to this season and getting more of an opportunity and making the most of it?
He's just so consistent. I think Coach McKenzie, Norval McKenzie, has done a great job with that room. You know, we've had production really from three players, and Ziegler got in there at the end of the game too. But, you know, Rocco, in his approach, his mindset, you know, he didn't carry the ball in the first game. I mean, here's a guy that's had a couple of really big runs for us. And obviously Saturday night, you know, he led the team in rushing and was really, you know, gutting it out there on the second backed up drive in the second half where, you know, we ended up coming away with a couple first downs and were able to move the ball early in that sequence. I mean, it is just, he is running through off sheer will. Mm-hmm. You know, there's not lanes there. He's just churning out yards and keeping us on schedule. That's just who he is. He does that every day. And I, you know, his success is not surprising to me because people that prepare the way that he prepares and, guys that care as much as he cares, I mean, they find their way to success. And I expect him to continue that trend, and I'm really, really happy for him.
Coach, let's take a quick timeout. We'll be back in just a second. Continue our coverage of Vanderbilt versus Stanford and a couple of quick thoughts against Vanderbilt with Georgia coming up on Saturday. We'll step aside, come back with the Commodore Hour and head coach Clark Lee after this on the Vanderbilt Sports Network from Learfield.
Welcome back to Commodore Hour. Great to have you with us. We are visiting with Coach Clark Lee after the Commodores fall 41-23 against Stanford, and now look ahead to number 2 Georgia coming to town on Saturday, 11 a.m. kickoff. What did you say,
11:02?
11:03. Oh, 11:03. Sorry, I was off by a minute,
yes.
So I'll try to be better on Saturday. Coach, what about the decision-making by Ken Seals? You touched on it a little bit toward the end of the first half. Overall, how did you feel like he did?
He was obviously, I mean, he was in rhythm early. We're still missing on some of the deep throws that we have. Now, there were a couple where he was taking hits right as he was releasing the ball. That you know, again, we got to clean the pocket up for him. But I think there's room for us to throw a catchable ball to, you know, Chris Pierce and certainly Will Shepard, where we're giving the ball in the air and giving them a chance to adjust to it and go get it. And that's where we just got to keep evolving that element of our offense. As far as just the pitch and the catch, particularly early, I felt like he was really in rhythm was pleased with how he was running the offense. The throw at the end of the half, just, you know, and he was being hit or, you know, being pressured on that throw too, but he will be better than that. We got to protect the ball, and we can't put the program in that position. And you know, he understands that. But on the whole, pleased with his performance. I thought, again, another tough outing for him where, you know, I think it was the third play of the game. So the first play, we were incomplete. Second play was Ray broke a run for a first down. The third play was a pass, and Kenny scrambled. And, you know, he put his foot in the ground, went vertical, ran through a tackle, got spun around, and then ducked his head and collided with two more and got another three yards or so. That's indicative of a guy that you know, is leading through his example and playing the brand of football that we should expect from Vanderbilt. You know, that was special.
On the defensive side of things, I noticed at one point you had a pretty spirited conversation with a couple guys. I want to say it was a couple of your linebackers. What do you learn about sort of picking the spots to do something like that? And was the message received like you hoped it would be right there in the middle of a game?
You know, you're just always looking for impact. And, you know, for me, I want those guys to have fun. I want them to represent themselves competitively on the field. I mean, I just, you know, I think what I learned in game one is just that, you know, we're still learning how to function in a four-quarter game where we're facing adversity. We broke through in that respect in the second game, but we also, again, played really good complementary football. And so things lined up where the offense got in rhythm, the defense got in rhythm, and it just felt really good. We can generate our own momentum on defense. Like, we can do that. But you have to play with a certain level of spirit. And I think particularly on that side of the ball, it's got to be effort-based and physical. And there were too many times where the ball was able to run on our perimeter and you know, get tackled in a one-on-one situation where we're dragging it down and it's kind of bleeding out yards.
Yeah.
I think particularly the conversation you're talking about came on the touchdown in the second half where we lost the fullback twice in coverage. And that's not excusable. I mean, we you know, that's a fundamental aspect of the defense that we were playing. And, you know, sometimes I just, you know, we just need to kind of be shaken awake a little bit. So I try to use my words at the right time to do that.
I know it was not four quarters like you were talking about, but I do want to zone in that goal line stand for a second. What lessons are learned in that moment for your defense? A tough moment. They stood up. Stanford kept coming at you guys, and you guys do turn it around to a 98-yard drive that results in a touchdown. Walk us through that sequence, that series, the conversation you guys were having on the headset, and what you feel like that can embody for you guys overall.
Yeah. I believe that it went play one was a play-action pass that Durkee knocks down. Good call, good execution. And a really good start to the sequence. From there, you know, there were two plays. One was a Q run, a quarterback run, that we were able to play physically through. And the other, I think, was just a normal run from the running back that we were able to down that set up the fourth down attempt. And there was a penalty there, but I believe an illegal shift. That we declined to get it to fourth and two. And I knew that it would expose us to the attempt, but I just felt like, again, we had the momentum. And I've seen our defense do that. I mean, they've done it in practice. And if you think back to the first scrimmage in fall camp, I mean, it was on the back end of like an 11-play drive, and they shut the offense down. And on the fourth down attempt, I believe, there was a pass interference called in the end zone. And so it reset the chains to do it all over again. And they made the stop. And we have that capability. Like, we have all we need to be successful and defend very well. We're still working on that, you know, coming to fruition through the course of four quarters. It happens in flashes, and I think even, you know, through the, you know, third and the majority of the fourth quarter, you know, we played solid on defense. It wasn't great, and it wasn't pretty at all times, but we played solidly, and, you know, we were able to force some punts and to give our offense a chance. You know, the goal line stand, though, is something that shows you the momentum we can generate on that side of the ball.
It's interesting. We're almost out of time with you, Coach, but I did want to follow up on one thing that you said there. You said accepting the penalty would expose you guys to the attempt. So I guess I find that interesting from a coaching standpoint. You could have taken the penalty. It would have been third down and goal from like
the seven or eight.
So basically your thought process is what there, I guess. Walk us through the choice of being third and goal from the seven and what Stanford might do, and then fourth and goal from the two and what Stanford might do, and how you came to that.
Well, they had two choices on a fourth down, and that's to kick it. They could have kicked it and certainly to go. And I think most people on fourth and two are going to go. And then in coming up short, you're forcing the offense to go 98, which we were able to do. I mean, the situation couldn't have played out better for Vanderbilt. But you know, my confidence level in defending fourth and two on the goal line, even against Stanford, I think Stanford probably liked their odds. I mean, that's kind of been their identity, right? They big up front, they're going to run power and mash you and get the yards. But I believe in that defense, and they've shown it to me. I mean, I've seen that from them, and I wanted to give them that chance. You know, you back up and you defend a third and seven, you're still probably defending two downs. And I almost feel like they have more tools at third and seven to go two snaps. You know, that could be, you know, again, to run the Wildcat quarterback on and just present some challenges that way. You know, I knew that they were going to go heavy, and I knew that we were going to have to kind of bow up, and we did it. And, you know, had they chosen to kick there, you know, that would have been three. But I loved the fact that they gave us a chance to make the stop. And I'm, you know, I was super excited for our defense to stand up in that occasion. That should have been the point that we looked at as the turning point in the game. Unfortunately, we gave the momentum back, and the turning point became, you know, what we didn't do to end the half. And again, the only last thing I'd say there is just like, but even then, you know, you got this opening snap in this second half where you have a chance to now take the momentum back. You know, let's go 60 yards on that first snap and get them back on their heels and get back to what we did in the first half to generate success offensively. We got to make the routine play. We got to do it consistently. And if we can do that, we'll find out how good our team can be. Until we do, we're gonna be kind of subject to the you know, the way the opponent's playing.
Final 30 seconds or so here. What do you hope to find out about your team against Georgia this Saturday?
Well, it continues to be about us. I mean, I you know, obviously we have a ton of respect for Georgia, and you know, they've had obviously a lot of early success here, particularly on defense. But their offense has clicked too. I mean, that's a skilled team. But you know, we have everything we need to do what we need to do in our stadium on Saturday. I mean, that's just at the end of the day, that's what we know to be true, and that we are a good team when we have everything clicking in the design, when we execute the details, when we play with effort and enthusiasm, when we show the level of resiliency that should define our program. And so this becomes about us continuing to get better and improve. And so I want to see the message from today in the preparation tomorrow. I want to see us stack days through the week, and I want to see us come out on Saturday and just absolutely unleash preparation on that field and give ourselves a chance at a victory.
Clark, thanks so much for the time. Always appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you, guys. Good to be with you.
All right. Vanderbilt head coach Clark Lea, the Commodores and Georgia Bulldogs coming up on Saturday. Pregame starts at 9:30 on the Vanderbilt Sports Network from Learfield. Come back and wrap up the Commodore Hour in just a moment.
Nashville's best sports talk lives on ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Welcome back to the Commodore Hour. Final 3 minutes or so here of our program. Andrew Allegretic here with Kevin Ingram. Just wrapping up some of the thoughts that Coach Clark Lee had for us. The first thing he noted is Ray Davis is certainly under the questionable category for Vanderbilt versus Georgia coming up on Saturday. That will be determined later in the week. Pearson Cook, who does the kickoffs, that's going to be determination probably later in the week as well. And it's funny, Kevin, I almost feel silly talking about kickoff men, but that was significant against Stanford because Pearson has been doing the touchbacks, and Joe Bolivis, is as good as he has been in terms of the field goals, was not powering it through to the end zone, which kind of exposed Vanderbilt some to those returns. So those are some of the notes that I took away. I don't know what else stood out to you about what Coach Lee had to say as we wrap up our thoughts here tonight.
Yeah, I think what you say about Pearson Cook is well received, because to me, if you can just bang it through the back of the end zone and take it at the 25, that's just fine, especially with the rules being what they are, where you can fair catch and you get the ball at the 25 anyway. I think it to me, that those make for interesting decisions on both sides of the football. But if it's me and you can just blast it through the end zone, you go ahead and do that every time. And it was not having him that did seem to make a difference. We saw Mike Wright a little bit at the end of the game, threw a touchdown pass in the final play of the game. And so that was good to see, and certainly looks like he was healthier this past week.
Yeah, for sure. And again, some of the things, clearly you got a sense from Coach Leaf that there was a level of frustration of what could have been against Stanford, for sure, huh?
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, especially that last sequence of the first half. But as he said on Saturday and again tonight, there was a lot more football to be played after that. You have to recover it and move forward.
Yeah, for sure. He talked about that fourth down play where they stopped, and it could have been their surge. It just didn't work out that way. All right, so thanks so much for listening tonight. Don't forget to download the Anchor podcast. This broadcast will be a rebroadcast tomorrow morning. The original episodes of the Anchor podcast come out on Thursdays. Our game broadcast starts Saturday at 9:30 in the morning on the Vanderbilt Sports Network. From Learfield, it's Vandy at 1-2 and Georgia at 3-0. Looking forward to it for sure. For Kevin, for Coach Jay Ralph, for Coach Lee, for Gus Whittakamp, I'm Andrew Allegretta. Good night from Nashville.
Thanks for listening to Commodore Hour. Tonight's episode was brought to you by the Middle Tennessee Ford Dealers. Built Ford Tough. Ascend Federal Credit Union, the exclusive credit union of Vanderbilt Athletics. And by Gupton Chrysler Dodge Jeep Ram in Springfield. The preceding has been a Learfield presentation of the Vanderbilt Sports Network.